Welcome to the weekly sermon podcast of Valley Grove Baptist Church. We are thankful you stopped by to hear from God's Word, to grow closer to Him, and to be inspired to reach your area of influence. All right, kids, if y'all want to head off to Children's Church with Miss Stell, remember it's for second grade and down. So if you're in second grade and down, you can go with Miss Stell. If you're above second grade, you need to find Daniel chapter 2 in your Bible. If you need some help, we got somebody near you who can help. Daniel chapter 2, we're gonna talk about the entire chapter today, kind of give an overview of what happens. We'll read a few passages within Daniel 2, beginning in verse number 10 is where the first passage we'll read specifically, and then we'll pick up a couple others as we go along. Last week, we met Daniel, who was probably a teenager, a young adult at best, who was a Jewish kid, Jewish teenager, young adult, who lived in Judah, Jerusalem, somewhere around in there, and around 580 B.C., so about 2,500 years ago, around that time, King Nebuchadnezzar came from Babylon, which is in modern-day Iraq, and came over to Judah and Jerusalem and overtook them and took away a bunch of captives, a bunch of young, smart, intelligent people, and took them, and then later in subsequent years came back again and again and literally destroyed the entire city of Jerusalem and took captive all but the poorest of the poor. They walked around 900 miles, probably took them around 2 months, give or take, to make the journey from Jerusalem to Babylon. And last week we saw how Daniel prospered, even in the midst of that hard and arduous journey, and how God was watching over him. And today we're going to continue to learn some things about God and about, hopefully, about us. And so what we're going to do is I'm going to kind of give you the story. First, we'll read a few passages here and there. Then we'll talk about one specific part of the story, because all of you are going to want to know about that part of the story. I promise every time you've read this part of Daniel, you've wanted to know what this part of the story meant. So we'll talk about it, and then ultimately we'll draw some meaning from the passage and apply it to our life. So that's kind of how we're going to go today. All right, so let's start out. In verse number 1, King Nebuchadnezzar has a dream. So he's asleep one night and he has a dream, and it's a terrifying dream, and he can't understand the dream. He doesn't know what to make of the dream. In fact, the text tells us that he slept, left him. That means he did not sleep anymore that night. And so he called in all of his advisors, his wise men, enchanters, magicians, Chaldeans, and he asked them what no king in the Bible or that we can find in recorded history has asked any person to do. Instead of telling the wise men the dream and asking them, hey, what does it mean? He says, oh no, you're going to tell me what I dreamed, then you're going to tell me what it means. So in essence, Nebuchadnezzar is saying, you're going to read my mind and then tell me what my mind meant by what I thought. Right? Crazy. But that's what he says. And in verse number 10, one brave or a couple brave Chaldeans who were the wise men of the day, here's what they said. King, there is not a man on earth who can meet the king's demand. For no great and powerful king has asked such a thing of any magician or enchanter or Chaldean. Verse 11, the thing that the king asked is difficult. That's an understatement. And no one can show it to the king except the gods, little g, whose dwelling is not with flesh, meaning they don't live around in our neck of the woods. When the king hears this statement, he goes ballistic. He goes crazy. In fact, he's so enraged and so angry that he says, y'all are just playing with me. Y'all are biding time till things work out in your favor. Guess what? I'm tired of all of you. And he issues a decree that moment that every wise man, every Chaldean, every enchanter, every magician, all of them are to be put to death that very instant. That's kind of harsh, isn't it? But once the king issues the decree, it must be followed out. Well, Daniel and his three friends that we met last week are in this group. They're considered wise men. They've learned all of this stuff in this three-year education program they were in, that the king forced them to be in. And so word reaches Daniel that him and his three friends, they gonna die. And Daniel's like, hold up, wait a minute. Can we have a little time, please? And so he gets some help from the captain of the king's guard, and he asks the captain, hey, will you please go ask the king if I can just have a little while to see if I can figure out this situation? And so the king's guard goes to the king, and the king grants Daniel some time. And so Daniel turns to his three friends and says, buddies, I'm paraphrasing here loosely, buddies, we got to get to praying. Because only God can get us out of this situation. And so Daniel and his three friends pray. And miraculously, beyond belief, the Lord answers their prayer and tells Daniel what Nebuchadnezzar dreams, and then gives Daniel the interpretation of the dream. All right, so you with me so far? Nebuchadnezzar had a dream. He said, All the wise men are going to die because y'all are joking me. Y'all are biding time. You really don't know what you're doing. Daniel says, hey, I need a little more time. Daniel gets time. Him and his three friends pray. God gives the dream and the interpretation to Daniel. So in the morning when Daniel wakes up, Daniel's like, finds the captain of the guard who helped him previously and said, hey, go tell the king, I got it. So Daniel eventually gets an audience with the king. Now remember, put yourself in this situation. The king is angry already. The king has said, y'all all gonna die. Then some nobody said, hey, can I have a little more time? And the king said, yes. Can you imagine the king's demeanor? Can you imagine his thought? Little old Daniel comes strolling in the palace. I can tell you what I would think, because it's probably what you would think. But you better get this right, or you might just lose your head right now. And Daniel walks into that situation. And Daniel says all the nice pleasantries, and the king says something to the effect of, hey, so you gonna be able to do this? And Daniel, in verse 28, I believe it is, 28, you can look at it, 28 says, and I'm paraphrasing here loosely, I'm not going to give you the interpretation, but there is a God in heaven who is. And so Daniel proceeds to tell Nebuchadnezzar the dream that he dreamed, down to the most minute detail. Daniel tells the dream correctly. This is important. Daniel tells the dream correctly. Then he goes on to tell Nebuchadnezzar what the dream means. Every detail, nothing is missed. Boom, 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 boom. And guess what? As you would be, as any of us would be, Nebuchadnezzar is awestruck. In verses 46 through 49, Nebuchadnezzar says, Daniel, this is amazing. And he praises Daniel and Daniel's God, the God of the Bible, God of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, the God of Jesus. Right? And he lavishes gifts on Daniel. And he says, Daniel, here you go. And he makes Daniel the top guy in the province of Babylon. That would be like the president today making somebody the governor of a state. Snap of a finger. Bam. I don't care who the previous guy was, you're the guy now. Right? That's what Nebuchadnezzar does. He says, Daniel, you're now in charge of the province of Babylon, which arguably was the most important province because that's where the capital was. That's where the king resided. And so Daniel, in an instant, goes from nobody to ruler of the entire province of Babylon. And in return, Daniel says, hey, I got my three friends over here. They helped me with this situation. They prayed with me. And so Daniel then makes those three guys the day-to-day rulers of that province. So they carry out all the day-to-day business in the province of Babylon. And that's the story in a nutshell. Now, you're probably asking the same question I ask and the same question I have always asked when I have read this passage. What about the dream? Come on now, tell me about the dream. So, we're going to talk about the dream, but I'm going to tell you that's not the most important part of the story. So we'll get to that in a second, but I'm going to indulge your curiosity, and we're going to talk about this dream and the interpretation that Nebuchadnezzar has. Nebuchadnezzar's dream is of a giant statue, right? And it has different metals or different colors as it goes down. So the top of the statue, the head of the statue, this is on your outline. It's in a little graph form. It's on your outline in a graph. You can look along with me if you've got an outline. If you don't, you can find one on our Valley Grove app if you're watching online. But on the left-hand side, the far left of the graph, you see the head of this statue that Nebuchadnezzar has a dream of is pure gold. It's gold. Then the arms and the chest region are silver. So it's gold, then silver. And then the torso and down to the knee, so the midsection down to the knee, is bronze. And then the legs are iron. And then the feet are iron mixed with like pottery clay. Okay? And that's the image that Nebuchadnezzar sees. But that's not all there is to the dream. And it's not just the statue. Nebuchadnezzar then sees a rock. And Daniel says, the rock is uncut by any human hand. That's be important in a minute. And the rock, this huge rock, comes and hits the statue on the legs. But when it does that, the entire statue turns to dust. And Daniel says, it is like chaff in the wind, which means it's really light, and the wind literally blows it away. But that's not the end either. That stone that crushes this statue grows into a huge mountain that literally covers the entire earth. That's the dream. Right? That's a little weird, right? If you dreamt that tonight, you'd probably wake up going, oh my gosh, what in the world? Right? Come on now. Y'all have all had those crazy dreams after you ate Mexican and thought, God, what in the world was that? Right? Or you ate pizza too late? Come on. That was Nebuchadnezzar's dream. But here's what Daniel says the dream means. Okay, follow with me. Daniel says that each of these layers, the head, the upper chest and arms, the torso, upper legs, and the lower legs, all are representative of successive kingdoms. We know that because he tells Nebuchadnezzar that he's the head of gold. Nebuchadnezzar's like, oh, yeah, all right. And then he says, each of the successive layers are kingdoms or empires that are going to come after Nebuchadnezzar. So the silver represents one, the bronze represents one, and the iron represents one. And throughout history, biblical scholars and historians have kind of debated on what empires these relate to. And in your chart, you can see there's two views. There's a Greek view and there's a Roman view. And it just depends on where you start to figure out where you want to be. Right? And so each of these layers, so the silver layer represents one kingdom, the bronze layer represents another kingdom, and the iron represents another. Right? But again, that's not the most important part of the dream, is it? Because the dream's not just about the statue, is it? Because eventually what happens to the statue? It turns to dust and is blown away by the wind. How does that happen? By the rock that hits it. And here's what Daniel says in verse 44, I believe it is. 46. He says, 44. The God of heaven will set up. So he says, the rock, the stone that you see represents the kingdom of heaven. The kingdom of God. The God of heaven will set up a kingdom that shall never be destroyed, now nor shall the kingdom be left to another people. So Daniel says, Nebuchadnezzar, you're the head of gold. After your kingdom ends, there's going to be some other kingdoms. But at some day, listen to me, but at some day in the future, God is going to set up a kingdom that nobody can conquer, that nobody will destroy. And in fact, it will cover the entire earth. And that's the dream and the interpretation. Now, don't be fooled. That's not the main point of this story. Don't be Nebuchadnezzar. Because Nebuchadnezzar kind of misses it. Because he gets stuck on the head of gold. Right? Hey, I mean, there's gold, silver, bronze, and iron. Gold's obviously the most valuable in those, right? And so Nebuchadnezzar's like, huh. And we see that because of the way he responds to Daniel. He's not worried about the other kingdoms. He's not even worried about the rock that crushes all the other kingdoms. And if we're not careful, we get stuck on trying to figure out who's who in the statue. And we miss the main point of this entire story. So you say, what is the main point of the story, right? It is, listen to me. It is that God is revealing Himself to Nebuchadnezzar again. And we will see that next week. And Pastor Joe's going to talk about Daniel 4 in a couple weeks. We're going to see it even more in Daniel 4. And see, we see an emerging pattern that God is revealing Himself to a pagan king over and over and over. So what do we learn about God in this story? How is God revealing Himself to Nebuchadnezzar? Let me give you a couple of things. And each of these, I've got five. There's five on your outline, but listen to me. These five. Two of them deal with your mind. Two of them deal with your heart. And one of them should give you courage. So let's show you what these are. All right. So I'm going to actually talk about number two and three first, and then go to one and four if you're looking along on your outline. This speaks to our heart. The first thing that deals with our heart that we realize from this story, or that Nebuchadnezzar should have realized and that we must realize, is that God can do what no man on earth can do. God can do those things which you and I can't do. Right? Do you remember what the Chaldeans say in verse number 10? There is not a man on earth who can meet the king's demand. They're absolutely true. They just fail to realize that there's a God in heaven who can. And see, who does Daniel go to when he knows he's got to get this right, or him and his three friends and a lot of other people are going to die? Who does he go to? Does he consort the textbooks? Does he go to Google? Does he go to Facebook? Does he ask his friends? No. He goes to the one person he knows has the ability and the authority to answer the question and to give him the interpretation and the dream. And that is the God of heaven. Because he knows that God can do things that you and I can't do. Jesus himself talks about this in his ministry. Jesus talks about salvation and all of this in one story with the disciples. And the disciples are like, hey, this is impossible. And those famous words that Jesus says, yes, you're right. With man, this is impossible, but with God, all things are possible. See, the first thing we realize about God in this story is that He can do things that you and I can't do. And that should deal with our heart. Because, see, listen to me, there's a lot of things that you and I need that we ain't going to find from nobody but the Lord. Right? Here's the second thing that deals with our heart in this passage. Unlike the Babylonian idols, God dwells with people. Do you remember what the Babylonian Chaldeans, magicians, and wise men said in verse number 11? No one can show it to the king. In other words, no man can show the dream to the king except the gods, little g with an S, and here's the comma, whose dwelling is not with people. Whose dwelling is not with people. The Chaldeans said, you know what? There's not a man on earth who can give you the interpretation. And if the gods could, they won't, because they don't dwell with us. Read with me the words of the Lord spoken through the prophet Isaiah in chapter Isaiah 46, 6 through 10. Here's what he says. Those who lavish gold from the purse and weigh out silver in the scales hire a goldsmith and he makes it into a god, little g. Then they fall down and worship. They lift it to their shoulders. They carry it. They set it in its place and it stands there. It cannot move from its place. If no one cries to it, if one cries to it, it does not answer or save him from his trouble. Now listen to the words of the Lord about himself in verses 8 through 10. Remember this, and stand firm. Recall it to mind, you transgressors. Remember the former things of old. Here's the important part. For I am God. There is no other like me. Declaring the end from the beginning. From ancient times, things not yet done. Saying, my counsel shall stand, and I will accomplish all my purpose. God's already spoken. God is saying, not only are those little gods with a G that you serve, that you put up on the shelf, that you idolize in your life, not only they're idols, but they will never help you. I am the only one that can help you. Because I dwell with you. And we see that most fully in the person of Jesus Christ. In fact, in the Old Testament, the same writer, Isaiah, says about Jesus hundreds of years before he was born, and his name shall be called Emmanuel, which means God with us. Listen to me. Here's a little bit of application for you today. A lot of us, let me rephrase that. None of us have a spot in our house, I don't think, maybe not. None of us, probably, there we go, throw a little contingency into it, probably have a little place in our house where we've got statues standing up. And there's probably none of us go over there, light a stick, put it in front of the statue, light a candle, and say a prayer to the statue. Right? Because we're too advanced for that. But you know what we do? We do the exact same things, but we just do it with things that are okay by today's standards. We idolize grades in school. Hey, look, you ought to do your best in school. Listen to me. You ought to do your best. Right? Totally for that. My two boys, I expect them to do their best. But listen to me. I'll be 40 in a few months. You know how many people have asked me my GPA in the last 20 years? Nobody. Because nobody cares. Well, hey, Ma, some of y'all go, Mom, Pastor said that. I ain't gonna worry about a GPA. That's not what I'm saying. You ought to do your best. But if you idolize those grades and you put them above the Lord, that is making an idol and putting it on. For some of us, it's sports. For some of us, it's the way we dress, it's the way we look, it's what people think about us, it's our Snapchat or our Instagram or our Facebook and how many followers and likes, and we mad if so-and-so doesn't like it or post it or retweet it and all that. That is an idol. You just don't have it on a statue. You just don't have a statue of it on a place in your home and pray into it. But it is an idol. And what I'm saying is that idol is not going to do anything for you. For some of us that are adults, it's wealth, it's retirement, it's this or that or whatever we want to make it to be. There are a million and one idols that we could put up, and none of them are going to do anything for us at the end of the day. Only the Lord deserves our worship because He dwells with us on a daily basis. Hey, listen to me. When you get sick and you're in the hospital, your retirement fund manager gonna call you? Hey kids, teenagers, when you get sick, when you're in trouble, Instagram gonna call you and ask how you doing? Come on. Your job gonna care about you? No, you know why? Because all of us are replaceable. But you know who does care? And you know who's gonna be right there with you in the hospital or in your time of need? That's the Lord, because He dwells with people. All right, let's talk about our mind for a minute. What we see clearly in this passage is that God knows the future and at times can make it known if He so wills. How does Nebuchadnezzar get a dream about the future? Because God gives it to him. Because God knows what's going to happen. As Isaiah said, He knows the end from the beginning. And what's going to happen in the future in ancient times. So God gives the dream because He knows it. God gives it to Daniel because it's his dream in the first place, because he knows the future and he can give the interpretation because God knows the future. God clearly knows the future and he knows what's going to happen in the future. But here's the second thing that should challenge our minds today, and I want you to think about this very carefully. God engages a pagan king for the king's good and God's glory. Now listen to me. Listen to me. Let's get real for a minute. If we were writing this story, there is no way that we would allow Nebuchadnezzar to get all of the goodness from God that he does. You want to know why? Nebuchadnezzar marches an army hundreds of miles to oppress, devastate, conquer, and destroy another kingdom. Then takes all of the best people from that kingdom and marches them 900 miles over an elevation change of 1,000 feet or plus over 2 months and makes them stay there. They can't leave. They can't go. And then takes some of them and makes them be put into a re-education camp where they are to forget their ways and take up the Babylonian ways. If you and I are writing this story, the only thing this dude gets is death, hell, and the grave. Right? Why? Because we don't like him. He's evil. He's bad. He's a narcissistic person, as we'll see next week. And he clearly doesn't see what the Lord's trying to do in his life. Come on. Right? But what does God do? God gives him opportunity after opportunity after opportunity after opportunity to draw him. For whose good? For his good. God ain't got to give this dream to Nebuchadnezzar. He does it for Nebuchadnezzar's good. And we'll see next week, we'll talk about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the fiery furnace. All of that story is for his good too. And when Pastor Joe talks about Daniel 4 at the end of the month, where God specifically tells Nebuchadnezzar, hey, if you don't follow me, bad things are going to happen. And then bad things happen. It's for Nebuchadnezzar's good. But you and I would never write that story. You know how? Because we're not writing that same story today. Listen to me. Listen to me. When we say things like, a Christian can never be filling a political party, we are saying, God, you can't work in that political party. Right? Come on. If we're saying there's no way a Christian could work in this White House or that White House, what are we saying? You just said God can't do what he did in Daniel. Right? Come on now. It's getting deep in here. What I'm saying is, we better be careful what we say God can do and what God can't do, because a lot of times God does things that you and I would never do because we've got gripes, we've got ill things, and we don't know the future. And so we assume God's going to act like we're going to act. Do you not see that? I mean, like, oh my, the parallels are so crazy. I don't care who you voted for, or who you like, Trump, Biden, Clinton, Bush, I don't care. But whenever you're on the other side of that and you say, oh, God would never allow one of his people to be involved in that political party or with that person. Come on, man. That's exactly, listen, Daniel took 3 years of education in magic, enchantments, and omens. That'd be like one of you spending 3 years at the GOP or the DNC. And then God placing you in a position of position to be used. And then you do it. We must get away from this pigeonholing people that we don't agree with and saying, oh, that can't be a Christian. They may. Now, clearly there are some things in the Bible that are absolutely morally wrong, okay? So don't think I'm being like a Unitarian here in this moment. There's some things that are clearly wrong. Murder, lying, cheating, stealing, bearing a false witness, all of that. But what I'm saying is, who are you and I to say that God can't raise up someone in some place that we don't like to change that place that we don't like for His glory and His honor? Because that's exactly what Daniel does his entire life. He does it for Nebuchadnezzar. He does it for Belshazzar. He does it for Cyrus. He does it for Darius. None of these places are godly places. But God says, I want to use that person to influence them and them and them. And if that same thing were to happen today, a lot of us would be like, Daniel's not a Christian. Daniel's not a follower of God. Daniel's not doing the right thing, because if he was, he wouldn't be associated with them. He'd be over there. He'd be leading a rebellion to get those Jews back to Israel. That's what we would say, because that's what we say today. All I'm saying is, you need to think about that God might actually be trying to use a person or that person or somebody to influence whatever you don't like toward Him for His glory and for their good. All right, here's the last thing, and this should give us courage. This should give us courage. What do we learn about God? God will one day set up a kingdom that will never be destroyed. This was future for Daniel, right? This was future for Daniel. It's present for us. Well, actually, it's past, present, and future for us. Because see, that kingdom, that rock that represents the kingdom that God is going to take or establish is the kingdom of God. And that rock is Jesus Christ. Right? It is Jesus Christ. And that kingdom that God is going to establish is the kingdom of God, which is manifested in today through the church, through us. And it is being built, and it will continue to be built, and it will go on and on and on. And one of the verses that I have hung to over the last 18 months is where Jesus tells Peter at Caesarea Philippi, when he asked them, who do you say that I am? And Peter responds, you are the Christ, the Son of the living God. And Jesus' response to Peter was, Peter, flesh and blood have not told you this. And on this what you just said, I will build my church. And it would have been great if he'd put a period there. But he put a comma. And he says, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. Listen to me. You can take this one to the bank. The church will go on. It will not be destroyed. It may be hampered. It may be slowed down. There may be people who don't like us. The government may try to kill all of us. That's happened in history past. But listen to me. The church will go on until God calls all His people home. So we should be think. This passage should get us to think about some things. It should pull on our heart, and it should give us courage, because the same God who was with Daniel to give him the dream, to move Nebuchadnezzar closer to him, and to tell things about the future, is the same God that we serve today. And He's calling us to be thinkers. He's calling us to be people who give Him His heart, and He's giving us courage by saying that if you're with me, everything's going to be okay, because my church will always prevail, and nobody, listen to me, if the gates of hell can't conquer the church, the government ain't got a snowball's chance in the microwave, right? So you can take it to the bank. If you give your mind and your heart to the Lord, there's nothing this world can do. You want to know why? We sang it today. Because it's finished. It's over. Everything that matters most has already been taken care of. And I don't know where you're at today, and I don't know what's going on in your life, and I don't know where you're at. But I can tell you, with the people in a room this size, there's somebody who needs God to take care of their heart. Because they're in a situation, and they're trying to find solace in God's with a little g. Right? And some of us in here, we need to let God take captive our minds, because we're saying He can't do things when He absolutely can do some things. And there's some of us that we are, listen to me, there's some of us that are woe, death, and destruction because of Corona and the government and this leader and that leader. And what I'm telling you is, in the span of history, it is a blip on the map, because God will not only take care of his church, but he will take care of the people who make up the church. Now, what does that look like? I don't know. Does that mean you won't ever get sick? Absolutely not. Does that mean nothing bad will ever happen in your life? Absolutely not. But at the end of the day, God has got history in his hands, and he is moving us with him in that. So I don't know where you're at. I don't know what's going on. Some of you, you need to let God do some work on your heart. Some of us need to give our minds to the Lord, and some of us just need to have some courage. And this passage deals with every one of those issues today. Thanks for listening. For more information about Valley Grove, visit our Facebook page or website, valleygrovechurch.org.